Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So today we'll continue reading from the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 2, the symptoms of Kali Yuga. And we will read verses 17 to 20. Charachara Guru Vishnur, Ishvarasya Kilatmana, Dharma Tranaya Sadhunam, Janma Karma Patu Panutaye. Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the spiritual master of all moving and non-moving living beings, and the Supreme Soul of all, takes birth to protect the principles of religion and to relieve his saintly devotees from the reactions of material work. Shambhala Grama Mukhyasya Brahmanasya Mahatmana Bhavane Vishnu Yashasa Kalki Pradur Bhavishyati. Lord Kalki will appear in the home of the most eminent Brahman of Shambhala village, the great soul Vishnu Yasha. There's no purports to these two verses, so we'll read 19 and 20, which have a purport. Ashvamashu gam aruhya devadatam jagatpati asina sadhu damanam ashtaishvarya gunanvita vicharan ashuna kshonyam Haye na pratima tuti, nripa linga chado dasyun, koti sho nihanishyati. Translation. Lord Kalki, the Lord of the universe, will mount his swift horse Devadatta and, sword in hand, travel over the earth, exhibiting his eight mystic opulences and eight special qualities of Godhead, displaying his unequaled effulgence and riding with great speed. He will kill by the millions those thieves who have dared dress as king. Purport. These verses describe the thrilling pastimes of Lord Kalki. Anyone would be attracted by the sight of a powerful, beautiful man riding on a wonderful horse at lightning speed, chastising and devastating cruel, demonic people with the sword in his hand. Of course, fanatical materialists may argue that this picture of Lord Kalki is a mere anthropomorphic creation of the human mind, a mythological deity created by people who need to believe in some superior being. But this argument is not logical, nor does it prove anything. It is merely the opinion of certain people. We need water, but that does not mean man creates water. We also need food, oxygen, and many other things that we do not create. Since our general experience is that our needs correspond to available objects existing in the external world, Let me just read that again. Since our general experience is that our needs correspond to available objects existing in the eternal world, that we appear to need a Supreme Lord would tend to indicate that, in fact, there is a Supreme Lord. In other words, nature endows us with a sense of need for things that actually exist and that are in fact necessary for our well-being. Similarly, we experience a need for God because we are in fact part of God and cannot live without Him. At the end of Kali Yuga, the same God will appear as the mighty Kalki avatar and beat the pollution out of the demons. Hare Krishna. Let's just read this couple of verses again. Ashvamashvu gamaruhya devadatam jagatpati asina sadhu damanam ashtaishvarya gunam vita vicharanashinakshonyam haina pratima jiti nripalinga chado dasyum koti sho nihanishyati. Lord Kalki, the Lord of the Universe, will mount his swift horse Devadatta and, sword in hand, travel over the earth exhibiting his eight mystic opulences and eight special qualities of Godhead, displaying his unequaled effulgence and riding with great speed. He will kill by the millions those thieves who have dared dress as kings. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Kaur Malika Chana Nera Vishesha Shivyavadi Vastu Chyadi Shkharne Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Kaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Well, we had over the last couple of days, few days, read the descriptions of Kali Yuga, this age that we are in the relatively earlier stages of right now. Which is an extremely degraded age in so many ways. And, oh, it's characterized by, we read a number of the main confusions and corruptions and pollutions of being, of person, which are particularly prominent in Kali Yuga. And even though we are in the very beginning stages of Kali Yuga right now, and there's much, much more to come, but still many of the qualities and features which we read about, they are already prominent to one degree or another. Like how the governments, or many of the governments, will become deeply corrupted and just abuse their position of authority to exploit the people, abuse the people, and just take advantage. How things like the climate will become disturbed and sort of deranged. Yeah, all different climatic phenomena will manifest, which are very, very dangerous. And according to the normal standards of climate, and And religion, what is called religion, will become basically atheism, although it'll still be called religion. So these, some of these things are already there to some degree, or in some cases some of those things are there very, very prominently, at least in some places. So this is Kali Yuga. This Kali Yuga is an age of quarrel and hypocrisy and a disturbance in so many ways. And as there's that verse, what is it? Manda Sumanda. How does that verse begin? Manda Sumanda Matayo Manda Bhagya Hupajita. In this age of Kali, men, means people, will be but short-lived. They'll be quarrelsome, unlucky, misguided, and above all, always disturbed. So, in many ways, we can see this is already there. But this is just the beginning. And much worse will come. You know, they're sort of ups and downs, but the general trend is down. So, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains yada yada hi dharmasya glani bhavati bharata abhyuta nama dharmasya tadatmanam shijamyaham. Whenever, wherever there's a decline in religious practice, a prominent rise, increase in irreligion, at that time I had to send myself paratranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam. You know this verse, Sulakshani? Do you want to say it for us? Are you feeling shy?
Come on,
Shetty.
Just tell us.
Okay, anyway. Yes. That's a good girl. She knows. Do you know the translation? In order to deliver the pious. To protect the pious or the devotees particularly. Vinashaya cha duskritam, and to destroy the duskritinas, the really aggressively, materialistically exploitative, abusive type of materialists. Vinasha, to destroy them. As interesting the way Krishna puts it, Vinash. Nash means to destroy. Vinash means to, means very. To very destroy. It's one thing to destroy. It's another thing to very destroy. Basically means like devastate, annihilate, just wipe out those demoniac, oh, terrible people who are just ruining the world simply for their own benefit. Simply. And dharma samsthapanataya, to reestablish the principles of dharma, sambhavami, yuge, I appear, I manifest myself, millennium after millennium. This is what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, fourth chapter. And, well, Kali Yuga, we're reading the description, and as we mentioned, some of the symptoms are already somewhat current, and some people don't understand, they just haven't got it, how bad it's going to become. And they think that now it's bad, it's already bad, but they think it's that bad. And they're expecting Krishna to appear, the Lord to appear, you know. Come on, it's already 8:25. Expecting the Lord to appear shortly. But he's not appearing. And actually he's not appearing because it's not that bad. It's bad, but it's not that bad. And of course, Lord Chaitanya's movement, his mission, is going on, which, despite the fact that it's getting bad, getting worse, step by step, but Lord Chaitanya's movement is there to make positive, to give really positive influence, which is also there. It's interesting, sort of, you know, the different extremes. Bad is increasing, and in certain respects some good is increasing, like vegetarianism is increasing on a very large scale, at least in the sort of the thinking world. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, in the sort of not so much thinking world, where it's kind of like just subsistence, somehow carry on, then, well, it's kind of anything goes. But in the thinking world, then there's no doubt that vegetarianism has increased tremendously and continues to do so, which is a sign of higher consciousness. It's practically goes without saying. Of course, for many people, they need to have it said how it's a sign of higher consciousness, but that sensitivity to life and the unwillingness to be abusive, the awareness of what it means, what meat eating means, that the awareness of it has risen, and once one becomes a little aware, becomes very straightforward what to do. So, but anyway, some people thinking that it's very bad, because it is bad, but thinking that it's worse perhaps than it really is, and knowing what Krishna says about appearing in Bhagavad Gita, when things get bad, then some people think, you know, that either he should appear, or some of them think he has appeared. Yeah. And in this way they create so-called avatars who are not. Although they may be clever, and they may even have some sort of powers, like mystical, magical, subtle powers, to do things without physical manipulation, but to say they're God, That's another thing. Just like when Captain Cook, have you ever heard of Captain Cook? If not, you didn't miss much. But the person who, you know, the Britisher who discovered, you know, different South Sea islands, Pacific Islands, and New Zealand, and discovered the people who were already living there. But anyway, when he arrived on his big sailing ship, relatively big by their standards, and you know, they had not yet figured out how to use the power of the wind. They would just use the locals would just use oars and things like that to propel their boats. And in came this, by their standards, massive ship. And fancy, really fancy. And then the people from the ship came on shore and exhibited certain abilities or whatever you might call them, which the local people didn't have at all. Like, you can point a stick at something, even a big creature, and make the stick go bang, and the big creature dies on the spot. Wow. Whoa. So initially, when Captain Cook arrived in certain places, the locals thought he was God. Seriously. Yeah. And when they came ashore from the ships, they treated them as God. They would bow down and offer them things and just extreme reverence. Unfortunately for everybody, Captain Cook was not God. In fact, he was a long way from being God. And his crewmen, you know, they were also even further perhaps away from being God. And after a few days, when they saw these people getting drunk and trying to rape the local women and just take stuff and all that, the locals, it clicked. This is not God. But this is... So, from accepting them to be God, it turned around to the point that they killed them. They chased them into the sea, and Captain Cook couldn't escape. And they killed them. So, but anyway, and this is just an example, but there's so many of so-called gods. And in the, at least, you know, you could say the Hindu community, or at least in that, those circles where Bhagavad Gita is taken seriously, then they read these verses, famous verses about Krishna appearing when things get bad, and then they think that various people are Krishna. And you can have, what is your name, Prabhu?
Jailish.
And what's your name?
Dheeresh.
Dheeresh. You may have your Dheeresh avatar and your Jailish avatar. Yeah. Actually, these things happen. And sometimes there's conflict between the different camps. Oh, yeah. And sometimes some of the so-called avatars don't have the flair, the charisma, and, you know, the wittiness or whatever it may be, to really convince many people that they are avatars. And so they cannot gather followings. And Prabhupada makes the point in, it's either Chaitanya Charitamrita or Srimad Bhagavatam, that this whole phenomenon of thinking that ordinary or slightly exceptional people of God is so common in India, and it's also so competitive because there's so many of them. But it says that in many parts of India you can find an unemployed incarnation of God loitering on every street corner. Now, Prabhupada had a very wonderful sense of humor. But what he's actually saying is correct. A little bit of a twist, perhaps, but it's like that. Yeah. But when things do really get bad, much worse than they are now, although things were already fairly bad, but when they really deteriorate to the extreme point, which is towards the end of the Kali Yuga, in other words, it's some thousands of years, in fact, some tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of years away, long way into the future, then when things have just hit the lowest levels of degradation, depravity, and it's just really extreme, then the Lord will appear. His next scheduled incarnation, as described here, is Kalki, Lord Kalki, the Lord of the universe, an incarnation, an expansion of Krishna. Actually, for that matter, both Rupa Goswami and Jiva Goswami in their Jiva Goswami in Krishna Sandarbha and Rupa Goswami in Laghu Bhagavatamrita. Yeah, Laghu Bhagavatamrita. Both of them make the point that Kalki is actually a Shachivesh avatar, an empowered jiva. Yeah, empowered by the potency of God in a huge way. So he's functioning as God, but actually he himself is a living entity and not actually directly of the category of God completely, but empowered. So anyway, Kalki, as described here, when the people are just so degraded that you can't really say anything to them, you know, like if you say the word God, they'll kill you. Well, that's pretty bad. Then he comes. You know, like in South Africa, if you're in an airport and you just say the word bomb, you're arrested on the spot. One of our devotees, one of my previous assistants, as he was going through security, they asked him, "What you got in your bag?" He said, "No, just an atomic bomb." Witty, funny. And they arrested him and held him for 2 days. Oh, yes. And then there's a whole big court case. And, you know, like different court appearances over a period of time. And then they let him off. But when things get really bad, you know, atheism will have increased to the point where, like, you know, in communist Russia previously and in communist China, so-called communists, not communist at all, but totalitarian China today, if you say the word God, I mean, it's becoming a little more possible, but up to a few years ago, you would definitely just be arrested. And if you're a foreigner, just booted out of the country. So, yeah, when things become so extremely bad like that, and you cannot, like today, you can reason with many people at least. And many people are open enough to hearing about these things, directly, indirectly. But when it becomes extreme, totally extreme, and there's nothing that can be done really to help the people, then the Lord comes, and the only thing that can be done to help them is to kill them. Yeah. It's almost, you could say, like a form of euthanasia, because they just become beyond too hopeless. So he's very beautiful, very powerful, very beautiful. Not, you know, normally people think someone is beautiful, it means a woman. You can't really have beautiful men. You might have a handsome man, but beautiful as such, it's like a feminine characteristic. But Kalki is so incredibly attractive looking, you can only say beautiful. Just like when Krishna was here 5,000 years ago, he was so beautiful. People would see him and faint. Did anyone faint when they saw you, Jailesh? No. Not even one. Sulochani, anyone faint when they saw you? Not yet. Still working on it. So, this is a male, not an effeminate male, you know, that sort of idea. A real male, but just incredibly beautiful, unbelievably, sort of devastatingly beautiful, but at the same time, completely devastatingly powerful. And just destroying these demoniac characters by the millions. Prabhupada made the point that as Kali Yuga progresses, and the governments become more both corrupted and incompetent and, you know, abusive, exploitative, etc., etc., the people will lose faith in them. You know, now you just have the phenomenon in democracy. You get this flip-flop, like in America. The Democrats, they're sort of the left-wing, more liberal, easygoing. They're in for the time being. Then the Republicans, who are the more, you know, sort of heavier right-wing, conservative, but don't worry, Republicans, the Democrats are not going to last long. And then the Republicans will come in again, and then the Republicans, people will become fed up with them, and the Democrats will come in again, and so on and so on and so on. But eventually they'll become frustrated with the whole process, just understanding that there's no real point choosing one group over the other. There's nothing to gain. Even I had the experience here in Mauritius with, was he a member of parliament? He was a member of parliament.
A former minister.
Of something. Not just an MP.
No, he was a minister.
Of something. So anyway, this gentleman won't mention any names. And I forget exactly what happened, but I think he was in the side which had lost the elections. Yeah. And was saying, oh yeah, well, maybe you'll get in next time. And he said, no, I think I'll just join the other party. And I said, oh, but, you know, they're like, they're different ideologies. And he said, no, it doesn't really make any difference. That's what they're basically the same. So people become frustrated, not just with one party and switch to the other, but with the whole process. So Prabhupada said that gradually countries will shrink in size because they'll become frustrated because, you know, there's all the corruption and whatnot. But there's also the question of competency. And who can run? You know, it's hard enough running a family, isn't it? Sometimes. And sometimes it just, you know, there are those moments where it becomes a bit too much. But try running a country with 300 million people. Ah! You know, what is it? The Peter Principle. Yeah, the Peter Principle. Elevate a person to a higher position because he's very competent. And now he's doing higher responsibilities and he proves himself to be competent. So you elevate him to a higher position. And eventually you elevate him to a position where he cannot handle it. He goes beyond his competency level. And that's what you have a lot. Anyway, so the countries will shrink until towns become countries. Because, you know, the people from the other town will just abuse them. And then eventually, Prabhupada said, every house will become a country. At least in the sense that they will not allow themselves to be dictated to by other people because it's just, they've just had enough. Yeah. So Kalki comes and destroys all these people. People you can't speak to and present some nice idea and then they may think, oh yeah, okay. And then they might improve themselves or become devotees. They're beyond that. So he destroys them. So here in the purport, our commentators are focusing on a particular point. It's an interesting point. The idea, and it's not an unpopular idea, at least in quote-unquote certain intellectual circles. It's an intellectual idea. It's not so much a common people's idea, but it's a so-called intellectual's idea. That why are people, human beings, why do they just have this tendency to develop an attraction or a sense of dependence on some sort of God? Some sort of God. You know, different cultures, their different ideas of what God may be or mean. But it's just so common. It's just so common. Even in, like in Africa, all of Africa, and many, many of the older cultures, there is worship of ancestors. That is the religion of Africa. Ancestor worship. It is the religion of South America. It is the religion of the people who were already in North America when Christopher Columbus discovered it. Their process is ancestor worship. New Zealand. I'm from New Zealand. the locals, their process is ancestor worship. It's a big thing throughout the world. And it's there in the Vedic tradition to some degree. But anyway, the point is that people, whoever they may be, they have this tendency. They just tend to gravitate towards some idea of God, some higher controller, and sort of take shelter of that God and become dependent on Him and pray to Him. Now, the quote-unquote intellectuals, or at least some of them, definitely, some of them, they think this, they call this, the term is used here, anthropomorphic. Anthro means human beings. There's also zoopomorphic, where, you know, the idea is there, some God or something being animal-based. And there are other pomorphics also. But anthropomorphic means that we have, for who knows what reason, but not a good one, we have this attraction to some higher deity, but we create at least the idea of that as a reflection of our human condition. So that higher character, he's sort of like a big human. He loves, he has relationships, he works, he thinks. He may or may not have a form, but in some cases he has a form. This is anthropomorphism. So, and it's all that the idea is to accommodate this illogical, just stupid attraction that human beings have of like a feeling of a necessity to have someone like that. But it's all stupid, because if you remember, do you remember, some of you older ones, John Lennon's song, Imagine? There's no heaven above us. No, what is it? No hell beneath us, and above us only sky. So, in other words, it's just outright atheism. Yeah, people think it's nice because it has a nice tune and it's a dreamy kind of way he expresses himself. But actually, it's really outright atheism. Imagine. Just imagine. So, yes. So this is the idea. For, you know, we have this, we need security. We have this drive for security and protection. And we've now projected it onto some non-existent higher entity, and really, you know, like really got into this. This is religion. Be it in a Hindu form with many gods, or a Christian form, or an ancestor worship type of form, or whatever it is. Different forms, which are just manifestations of the same human sort of aspiration. And these so-called intellectuals think this is a good explanation. We have figured it all out. The irrationality of religion, uselessness of it, it should just be rejected. But as described here, it's a very nice point. I don't know if you ever thought about it in these terms, but it's a very good point. You know, we have many aspirations and drives and needs. We need food. And we have this feeling we need food. And when people don't eat, they really, you know, they become disturbed and they feel that need. But is it that because we have for some silly reason, we have this drive towards eating? Does that mean now we created food? And before that there was no food, and actually food, you know, there's no need for it, and it's just all irrational. What do you think? No. We need to breathe. We need to breathe. Did we just create air just because we had this feeling, hey, we should breathe? No, it's an actual need. It's an actual need. Need for food is an actual need. Need to breathe is an actual need. And many other things. Many other things are actual needs in our human condition. And so, why not the attraction to God being an actual need? Yeah. Certainly, it's not at all, like, obviously rational and just obvious that our attraction towards God is just some sort of foolish hallucination, anthropomorphism. It's not. But rather, it's more in keeping with so many other things that we need and which exist. So, therefore, that's an argument for saying, well, we feel a need for God, that would indicate that God exists. Yeah. So anyway, that's the sort of the direction they went in the commentary there. But all glories to Lord Kalki. And a devotee asked, a number of devotees asked Prabhupada about, you know, can we stay to see Lord Kalki? Wouldn't it be interesting? Because he is the next avatar. It'd be really nice to see him. And Prabhupada said, no, you should just go back to Godhead. Just get out. Don't wait around. Because in the meantime, it's going to be really difficult. So you want to see Krishna? Okay, go back to Godhead, see Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Does that sound all right, Sulochani? Yes? She's thinking about it. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Okay.
Hare Krishna.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
See, when we have been reading for the few days here, the element of compassionate develops in people. I've got a problem. So, the problem is that when we hear the description going on, and we go out and see the description fits with the people there, outside there, therefore I become compassionate to them. And this goes on brooding in my mind.
Okay.
Even when I do my japa, I can, some of these ideas come into me. So therefore, how to sort out of this compassionate nature?
Yes, good point. So you have to express it. Yeah, if you don't express it, if you just let it sort of go around in your head, then... Well, at best it'll be unproductive and unsatisfying. But at worst, you know, like some things, like seeds, if you don't plant them, or food, if you don't eat it, it goes rotten. So sometimes these desires, inclinations we have, they can sort of go rotten. Like knowledge. If you don't distribute knowledge, it either you lose it, because you're not really using it, or it'll sort of just become distorted in the mind. So similarly with compassion, mercy, and other types of feelings, they should be expressed properly. And then one can become satisfied in that. Plus it may develop further. Because these are very rich, love, mercy, humility. These are actually very rich emotions. And they have a lot of depth to them, which, the average person doesn't see at all. At least they don't see the depth so much. Yeah. So, but if you express them in the right ways, means in Krishna consciousness, then you become satisfied in that you're actually helping people. Plus the sentiment, because it's very deep, more of it develops or is given to you, and then you become more compassionate and you become more able to express compassion. Because in a very rudimentary beginning stage of feeling compassionate, you being very sort of inexperienced in compassion, you may try to express your compassion in ways which are not really suitable. Like, someone like, what was her name? Mother Teresa, I think it was, in Calcutta. She would take in these street people and feed them. Yeah, and I think, anyway, that she would do that sort of thing, basically. But she would feed them meat. Yeah. This is part of her compassion. Because of the lack of depth in her compassion, she didn't get the idea that, I'm trying to help the people. What about the animals? I'm abusing the animals incredibly severely, because, what could be more severe abuse than killing someone? I'm abusing the animals so severely and so unnecessarily to help the people. So it's like imbalanced compassion. Yeah. Prabhupada gives the example. The father is sick and the children come. Oh, we must help you. And, he's sick, he's losing weight and it's bad. And they think, oh, we must feed him. That's a nice idea. But then they feed him some wrong food, like some fried food, and it kills him. So in the name of being compassionate, you killed him. So, all these things have to be done carefully, with proper guidance and based on proper information and understanding. Otherwise, as they say, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Yeah. In the name of helping, you make things worse. Oh, yes. And nowadays, many of the solutions for many of the problems actually make things worse. When I was young and the hippie movement started, then there's amongst the young people a widespread idea that, being moral, maintaining moral standards of, particularly things like no sex before marriage. They thought, this is no good. We're being restricted and we're getting hung up. We're not expressing our feelings. So free love was really free lust. But they thought, oh, it's a good thing. You know, we must express our feelings. And famous song in my day, if you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with. It's like, you know, straight out of the hippie Bible. If it feels good, do it. If she looks nice, just grab her. So, but as a result, among other things, you have the AIDS phenomenon. It's incredible. Not here in Mauritius yet. I mean, it may not be incredible yet, but like in South Africa, it's incredible. It's amazing. A few years ago, I read that in the public hospitals, it was something like 90% of the people in the hospitals were in the hospitals because of HIV / AIDS situations. 90%. And the life expectancy now is, well, that was like 10 years ago, it was 45. As I understand, it's gone down to maybe under 40 now. So people like my age, even your age, by those standards, oh, we're old men. We're living on borrowed time. We should be dead. But this is developed. Such a big part of it was the whole hippie idea. You know, express your feelings and free love and all that. Which sounds nice.
It sounds nice.
But it's not nice. I mean, not that it's not nice, but it's just misdirected in the extreme. Yeah. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So, Sulakshmi, should we finish now? I think that may be yes. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.